Welcome to Talk Truth Radio with your host, Dr. Rain Morgan. Dr. Rain Morgan is Mother Earth, and you can look forward to the next 3 hours of enlightening talk. What are the issues? More importantly, what are the solutions? We hold the torch. Together we stand. Now join Dr. Rain and this evening's guest. Open your mind and have a good time.
Hey, good evening and welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining me on Talk Truth Radio. I am Dr. Rain Morgan and I'm your host for this evening. I'm your host for all the evenings. What am I saying here? Of course I'm your host. It's Wednesday night and here we are and I'm the one that does this. And of course we want to send out special thanks to Sandra Rose Michael and Energy Enhancement Systems for paying for what we do, and say a special thanks to her and all her hard work she brings us every Wednesday night. So, all right, I have a very, very special guest this evening. I have been attempting to get Nikki Scully on my show for a while. We've kind of been doing a little dance, but Nikki is quite the world traveler. And she's booked way out there. So tonight, we grabbed the brass ring. We have Nikki with us. She is the author of several books. One that is maybe my particular favorite is Alchemical Healing. But she also writes a book called Power Animal Meditations. And she does lots of cassettes, audio cassettes, and things on tape for you to listen to. Nikki Scully is a healer and a teacher of metaphysics. She teaches shamanism and the Egyptian mysteries, and she's been doing this since 1982. That's a long time, Nikki, and lecturing and doing seminars worldwide, and she also, which is something that I have to say is on my goal list. I want to do a spiritual tour to Egypt. And I know she goes to lots of sacred sites, but I want to go to Egypt. Tonight we're going to be talking with Nikki about everything she does, but especially about her new book, Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt. Now, Before I bring Nikki on, I want to read the introduction in The Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt, because this is a subject that most everybody out there in the metaphysical world has bantered around, talked about, given their opinions. And I've had many people in my own practice ask me, what's coming? What does 2012 mean to us? What's it going to be like? What's going to happen? And I really think that Nikki has so concisely, so succinctly written this in the introduction to her book, so simply, as we transit from the age of Piscean energy to the Aquarian age, we can already discern the advent of fundamental paradigm shifts. During the last several thousand years, mainstream traditions have required intercession with most all forms of expressed divinity or God. Most people have looked outside of themselves for the Savior, the Teacher, the Messiah, and even for their own personal well-being. We are entering a time when people are searching for a way to stretch the envelope. Many of the fundamental traditions are splintering and disintegrating from within, and institutionalized power structures age and fall. The old ways are not working, and we are being driven to find what is real and true and what will carry us forward. An inevitable result of this search for solutions will bring us into the intrinsic power of our own time. We will become aware of our own divine nature and the authority and power that are the essence of all awake and aware beings. Oh, Nikki Skelly, that was so good. Good evening.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And it's very important that we know that this book was co-authored and that my co-author is Linda Starwolf, because she is the visionary that brought forth the vision that I was able to articulate in The Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt.
Right, right. And I want to add that to that, that the purpose of this book, from the two of you, is to return certain of the ancient mysteries of Egypt to today's world to help human beings embrace and step into their divine nature. You gotta love it.
Thank you. What a wonderful introduction. Thank you.
Well, I have been a fan of yours since we first tried to get you booked into the event that I produced a couple of years ago, the No Nonsense Prophecy Conference. And I got your books then, and unfortunately, you had had an event in your life that was very sad, and you were dealing with that, and you weren't able to come. But that's when I really became enamored with you, Nikki, and your work. You do good stuff. And
I've been having fun.
I know, and I kind of want to, before I be quiet and let you talk, I want you to talk about the alchemical process. And you and I, as I read through alchemical healings, I mean, you hung out with the Grateful Dead.
Yes, I did.
You were out there hanging out back in the day. It was my day, too. We're both old hippies.
That's a good place to start from.
Yes, we're both old hippies. And, you know, as I read and you know, through your whole history of marriage and the ending of, and marriage and the ending of, and going through cancer, you have really been through, like me, some very trying times. But that is the alchemical healing, isn't it?
Well, it is. And in actuality, it was written as a guidebook for the form, alchemical healing, as a way to teach people how to help themselves and how to assist in healing others what happened is that my publishers, Inner Traditions Baron Company, said if I was going to put forward a form of that magnitude, that in order to give myself credibility and give credibility to the form, I needed to tell a bit of my story. Yeah. So the first 55 pages is sort of the intro into what's fit to print about my life.
Yeah.
And it was the most difficult part to write, because just sifting through I've had a very intense life. I spent many, many years right in the thick of that whole Grateful Dead psychedelic music cauldron of the 60s and 70s before I came up to Eugene, Oregon, where I've been for 26 years now, and where I really came to study healing and find the tools that were needed to help in what was going on in our family, our extended family, and the world situation. So, then I discovered there was life after dead. That was a concept.
Life after that, yeah. How did you first get keeping in with the new book, Shamanic Mysteries? Because it would be real easy for us to do a show on the shamanic healings. And I actually thought, Nikki, that if we could find another hour to schedule you in, or an hour and a half to schedule you in, and I'm sure we need that hour and a half, that I really would like to get into that book, because I would like to talk about the elements. And there's just so much.
The elements are presented in the Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt, or in the alchemical healing, or in power animal meditations. I mean, the elements are fundamental to whatever school or form of alchemy, shamanism, or most traditional forms of magic. So, was there a particular path of the elements that tweaked your interest?
All of it. And I have to tell you,
differently in each book.
I've spent more time in, to tell you, that, to be really honest, I've spent more time in alchemical healing. And I am going through, I'm currently going through Shamanic Mysteries. And that's why I didn't really want to talk with you a lot, because one of the things that I find very interesting in a book to do, especially when we're talking with the teacher, is to start taking it a chapter at a time. But I have to tell you about this, Nikki, and it's probably something that, well, it's a thing we can share with everybody. About, I'm going to say now it's 9-10 years ago, I had the feeling that I needed to touch a woman's hands, the insides of her palms. And as I did that, I closed my eyes and I put my fingertips in her palms, and I began to move them around the lines in her hands and even between her fingers, and her whole life lay bare to me. And I had searched books for years to find something that somebody else was doing this, that they were reading through their fingertips, through the hands. And I didn't find anything about it until in your book, Alchemical Healing, Seeing with the Eyes in the Hands.
Well, actually, there's a lot of ways and expressions for seeing in the hands. I remember, I'll get to the eyes and the hands soon, but I'm just remembering a time of going to hearing about an interesting ministry that was happening. I think it was in Redwood City in Northern California, somewhere down there. This was probably in the 80s. And I had just come from a Grateful Dead concert at Red Rocks, where I had a very dramatic experience of having the music appear to move into and through a crystal that I was holding up and praying with during the drum sequence, which was always kind of a time for me to really go into some serious prayer with that music and amplify it. And so I went to this this service to see what this person was like. And one of the things she did was a demonstration of psychometry. Are you familiar with psychometry?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'm very talented. That was my first gift to ever show itself to me, was psychometry.
Oh, interesting. Well, she passed this tray around, and I reached into my purse and realized I had that exquisite, pretty good-sized chunk of beautiful crystal. And I took it out, I put it on the tray, and of course, when the tray came back to her, that was the first thing she took hold of, and she held that tray up, or held the crystal up, and she felt it with her hand, you know, it's just in her hand, and she said, "This crystal has been at a cathedral, and you've been at where you went to pray, and all your prayers are in this crystal." And she had no way of knowing that.
Yeah,
no way. That was an example of somebody who had developed sensitivity of the hand. So if you were practicing psychometry as your first gift, well, then that's a pretty natural that your hands and your fingertips were already open. What most people in our culture aren't aware of is that the eyes that you see in the hands in Tibetan and East Indian and even some North American native art are actually express organs of sensory acumen that can be developed. And we all have them. We have them in the soles of our feet, in the palms of our hand, and the third eye. But our culture doesn't really acknowledge or support or validate that, so it's atrophied in most of us.
Right.
So it seems like an unusual gift when somebody realizes that they have it, when in actuality it's just waiting for us to remember. So the work that I do in alchemical healing, when I awaken the energy or when I assist people in remembering or reconnecting to the universal life force that's always accessible, I add that piece of facilitating the opening of the eyes of the hand so people can get the benefit of that additional sensory power that they already have but has been shut down. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And there's something else that's interesting to me when you talk about the eyes and the feet. I was told by Thomas Ashley Ferrand many years ago, he's my mantra teacher. He teaches me Sanskrit mantra and has for, I guess, 8 or 9 years now. And he, in one of his classes, talked about the chakra in the feet. And he talked about how when you sit on the floor before the masters, they didn't want you to point your feet in their direction. Like if you sat before the Dalai Lama, you would, sit in the lotus position or keep, you know, have your feet tucked under you. I can't stand to have my 2 feet together touching. Like when I sleep, my feet have to be apart. Wonder why that is.
That's interesting. I don't know, but I know that in places in Africa and the Middle East, it's an extreme insult to have your feet pointing at anybody. I mean, the soles of your feet accessible to anyone's vision.
Interesting. There's an energy that creates between my feet, and it becomes, if I'm lying on my side, you know, and your legs would be together and your feet would be, you know, ankle to ankle, so to speak, there's an energy that builds between my feet that would become, in 5 minutes, intense. And I have to separate them. And I just found that an interesting phenomenon in reading your book about the eyes and the hands and the feet and all of that.
Well, we very consciously open those eyes so that people can begin using them. And the way the eyes and the feet are used is after they've had their eyes of the feet open, I tell people to spend as much time as they can barefoot on the earth and begin to notice how your feet can attract the minerals or the various intelligence or even the vortex energies within the earth or the ley lines within the earth. and begin to consciously utilize those connections. But we, most of the time, don't realize the incredible connection that's possible in that very simple way. And, of course, the eyes and the hands, when open, that's how you're not just transmitting energy through your hands to do energetic healing. You are receiving information through that chakra or sense organ or whatever word you use to convey it. There's a language there that when you experience it, when you learn it, when you begin to recognize the subtle voice of those eyes, the little quivers, the tingles, the signals that tell you that something's happening when you're doing very subtle energy work. It's very important. It's very profound.
Yeah. I want us to talk about Egypt and
my favorite,
you know, the shamanism of this. Yeah. You know, are you familiar with Utadi essential oils?
No, I'm not.
They are the finest essential oils in the world. Ra-Ed is the maker of these oils, and he is seventh generation Egyptian medicinal oil maker. He was Barry Young's first partner and broke away because he didn't want to lower the integrity of the oils for it to become multi-level marketing. Well, I am going to have Raed Roddy is his name, R-A-E-D-R-A-D-Y, Raed Roddy is his name. I'm going to have him on my show. We were speaking of the chakra system, and he said the way that the
Are you there? I'm not hearing you.
Okay, guys, sorry, a little technical difficulty there. We have them every now and then. All right, so I was talking with our guest this evening, Nikki Scully, and I wanted to make an important point which kind of will set off what I want Nikki to talk about. Ra-Ed from Utadi Oils was talking to me about the difference in how the Egyptians view the chakra system. Eastern philosophies, of course, the crown chakra is thought of as the most spiritual, the highest of the chakras. But Ra-Ed had said to me, no, not in Egyptian philosophy. In the Egyptian chakra system, it's the heart chakra. And you, in your book, talk about the renewal of the healing power of the heart is the result of the sacred marriage between the heart and the mind. And I want to start there. What's happening with that renewal? Where are we going to go?
Okay, well, first let's basically say that when they were doing the embalming and the mummification rites in Egypt, they would simply suck out the brain. The brain was not considered important. The heart was the organ of the most import, because the heart, to the ancient Egyptians, is the seat of intelligence. And so what we're doing, and I'm doing this also in alchemical healing, I'm going about it a different way, at a different level of perspective. The idea that we have been running ourselves, our families, our countries, the world, from various, if you want to associate them with chakra centers, it would be from our survival, flight or fight instincts.
Right. So
that would be
chakra.
Running it from the first chakra center.
Right.
You know, what's it going to take to survive? The second one would be making our decisions based on our sexuality and how we're being ruled by our hormonal systems.
Right.
The third chakra center are those of us who, by our will, make things happen. And then there's those of us who, by our mind, think them into being or figure it all out.
Right.
Well,
analyze.
When you look at it that way, it isn't working. Those kinds of ways of discriminating and making choices and running our lives, our own, let alone anybody else's, simply backfire every time.
Severely.
The only way that really works sustainably and consistently is when we make our choices through the perceptions of the heart. And it's a trick. Moving into that place, it's sort of like, you know, we live in the past or in the future. We live in various parts of ourselves. When we're absolutely in balance and we're absolutely present in any moment, fully present, then we're connected to everything. And that's the place of the heart, the very center of our being. So when we are fully present in the now from the perspective of the heart, then we have access to a much wider range of intelligence than we get from our brains or our hormones or our will, even though we justify our will so easily. And it served us so well. If we can't make that shift into the heart mind and the intelligence of the heart, we're in serious trouble here because it just hasn't been working.
Yeah, it is, yes, and it's now falling apart around us, except for those of us that are making this transition, doing what we need to do to make this transition.
And it isn't that life around us changes dramatically when we move from will to heart or from mind to heart.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is our perspective changes and everything looks different. The same situation will have a different solution if we're looking at it from our heart in a balanced place of love and compassion. That's just reality, how it works. The drama disappears. The conflict disappears. We become in harmony. And then whether it's the chaos of a tsunami or a war or just day-to-day getting by, our whole way of responding changes and becomes one of a kind of resonance with what is, than the need to forcefully change anything.
And, you know, I call that responding instead of reacting.
Well, it's true. But we also will respond with more intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
That's my new word, intelligence. You know, where's the intelligence?
Yeah, that's a good question to ask, isn't it? Where is the intelligence in this? Absolutely.
I mean, the human species is supposed to be at the top of the intelligence chain, not just the top of the food chain.
Yeah, absolutely.
The problem is that we're so egocentric, so chauvinistic about ourselves, that we don't realize that there might be other species or beings on the planet that may be equally or even more intelligent than we are. But they don't speak the
now,
same language.
There's a concept.
And the one that comes to mind actually is elephant.
Elephant?
Elephant. First of all, elephants have a huge heart to go with their huge body.
Right.
But they don't forget anything. And they can communicate across miles of tundra using frequencies that we can't even hear. And I learned that they have ritual, literal ritual. If they're in a migration and they come across the remains of other elephants,
mm-hmm.
that they will stop and they each in turn touch and honor and remember, in a sense, interact with that element that has been poached or has died or whatever happened to it. And they grieve.
Isn't that sad?
What's sad is that we just take for granted that it's all here for our bidding. It's all here for our use and abuse and exploitation. That's what's sad.
That is
elephants
sad.
Are really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, elephants. And, you know, I will never forget being at the fair and walking up to the elephant that was giving the children, their big folks also rides, and I walked up to the elephant and I just kind of stroked its trunk and I looked at its eye. We made eye contact for quite some time and a tear rolled down the elephant's eye. Could never from that time convince me that they weren't magnificently spiritual, highly
sensitive beings.
Yeah.
Whales and dolphins are another example.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't begin to fathom what intelligence they might hold because we're so, you know, chauvinistic, I guess, really is a pretty good word. Arrogant.
Arrogant.
You know.
Yeah.
Self-aggrandizing. And it's not that we're not incredible beings. I mean, we have capabilities beyond any other species, but we're not using it. Look what we're doing with it. It's not much different than the fact that we're squandering all this money fighting a horrible, tragic, senseless war when we could be feeding the planet and making friends.
Absolutely.
And instead,
absolutely,
we're becoming hated everywhere.
Everywhere.
So what does that say for the intelligence of a huge mass of people that claim to be in control of their destiny and their empire?
Not a whole lot, huh?
Well, I don't think we're seeing smart here.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Now we've got two here, Nikki. Where's the intelligence in that? And I don't think we're seeing smart.
Well,
good
but
stuff.
The fact is that we have it in us. We have the capacity to solve all of our own and all the world's problems within us.
Yes.
We have in our genes the connection to our ancestry and beyond to the intelligence that infused consciousness onto this planet. You know, we're it. It's part of us. We're so darn dense. The whole point of alchemy is the spiritualization of matter. The point of alchemy is to take the prime material, the lead that the alchemists were said to have turned into gold, and expand that matter sufficiently to allow spirit in. The spiritualization of matter is the hope and result of alchemy. And frankly, we're all pretty dense if we're not getting it. And we, You know, we are alchemists. We are the vessels within which all of this potentiality and possibility exist. And we're shown to be a magnificent tool of alchemy just by the basic way that we take in food, and even though we're not conscious of it, we are separating out what's nourishing and what's waste. We're building our bodies and directing our energies to function and survive in a very complex gathering of a community of millions, billions of cells that are working together to function so incredibly brilliantly. And within each of those cells that combine to make up this complex community are the entire history of who we've ever been and what we bring to that. We're built to interact with our environment in a way that we can respond. But most of our responses are reactions based in loops that have been impressed upon us by people who are as asleep as we have become.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So how loud a wake-up call is it going to take? What is it going to take? Or are simply going to just go poof like other species that have not been able to adapt fast enough to what nature has given them? With us, it's different because it isn't about nature impinging on us as much. It's about what we've done to mess with nature and create a toxic environment that doesn't support life.
I've been asking this question for 12 years now on talk radio. What is it going to take?
Well, if you look in the shamanic mysteries of Egypt, if you ride that journey, if you take those rites, and they're serious. These are not, let's take a light read and see where we go. People who pick up that book and use it will get from it in accordance with their ability to take it seriously and surrender to the mystery that will open to them in accordance with their attention. Attention's the coin of the realm. Attention is what you pay. So if you get a map, such as the Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt, and you follow that map in a serious and sacred way, and you honor and expect that offering, then you're going to find the tools. You're going to find the accessibility to wake up to powerful inner guidance that allows you to remember yourself, to become whole again, to come in alignment with your own divinity. And from that place, the solutions will manifest naturally.
I want to say to the folks out there about getting, excuse me, got a little toad in my throat here. Your book, this book is absolutely beautiful. The pictures, you know, I mean, even at 57, Nikki, I still like to have books with pictures.
Well, these illustrations are done by Chris Walder, who is known for her Goddess Tarot deck, for her Lover's Path Tarot deck. She is an incredible visionary illustrator. And she was able to take Star Wolf's vision that I was able to articulate and point to her where in the Egyptian literature she could find the images of what Star Wolf was seeing and create Star Wolf's vision pretty true to how Star Wolf saw it. And what's further amazing is Star Wolf didn't know Egypt when we started that process. She'd only been there once with me. She hadn't read a lot. She hadn't studied it. So she would have these visions and describe to me what she was seeing. And because I've taken 30-plus groups to Egypt and been going there since 1978, I was usually able to determine what she was seeing and ask her the appropriate questions so we could get the right names, the right staffs, the right headdresses, the right clothing, the right, you know, so that it was what they were trying to convey. Now, when you look at those illustrations, you'll see a very familial quality to the pantheon of Egypt. And that was purposeful, because this is our family. These are our ancestors, and they want to be accessible to us. They want us to be able to look at them and remember.
Well, and you say in the book, in the introduction, there's so much in the introduction of this book that you could kind of stay there. You say it's our intention to familiarize our readers with members of the ancient spiritual family that has overseen the human experiment and assists in our evolution and awakening, whether or not we are aware of their presence in our lives. And you go on to say, we will show how their essences are woven inextricably into our very DNA as prominently as that of our ancestors. So, and it's connecting back to that through these rites of passage that are described in this book. There's so much here. Nikki, esoteric versus esoteric.
Well, exoteric would be the dogmatized religions, the stuff that's out there, what they want you to believe, and the way the traditions are expressed in a way that's available to everyone. Mm-hmm. The exoteric is the stuff behind the scenes that you don't really get to know where it's coming from. Because if you did, you wouldn't need the intercessors. You would be able to go directly to source. So esoteric knowledge is hidden knowledge. Generally speaking, it's, you know, the stuff of the wizard behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it's very much like the Wizard of Oz. And in other cases, there's a deep connection. And I would say true esoteric knowledge is held sacred, more important than secret. We have a little confusion in our world between what's secret and what's sacred. And consequently, a lot of what is sacred has been kept secret, and so we're in the dark about it.
Right.
And that needs to come out into the light. It needs to be able to be articulated in ways that people can take back their power and begin to co-create in a way that we are appropriately stewarding our planet and our families and our world.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how the mainstream religions have so shrouded everything that is held sacred in the darkness of evil and black magic and all of that. And what a great way to keep the masses turned away.
Well, I was talking with Starwolf earlier about this thing about this whole new agey thing about the light and how people have these experiences that pull them out of a lifetime of darkness and they suddenly see the light and then it's all about the light. Well, the problem is the more light you have, the more shadow that's created. And the balance has to be sustained and maintained in order for any true growth or knowledge to happen, because we have to own all of who we are. We can't just strive for the light. Otherwise, we get really fouled up and off balance. So,
well, in magic, I'm a long-time student of high ceremonial magic, and in magic, we're taught that the power is in the dark side, to make friends with the dark side of self. Not so much the light.
I guess how I would say that is in the reconciliation of the opposites within us, and in
owning that
we are not victims. We are all of it. We have the victim in us. We have the perpetrator in us. There is nothing that's happening on the planet that we don't own, because we're truly all connected and we're all one. So if we try and take what we term as evil and separate ourselves from it and deny its existence or cramp it down in a judgmental way, then it distorts and becomes what would have been shadow, then becomes worse. It becomes distortion and evil, and then it's cast out and separated, and we lose the possibility of coming into balance by denying the wholeness of who we are. So if we don't do our shadow work, if we don't honor the fullness of ourselves, then we cannot live in the fullness of who we are. And we aren't going to make it.
And we aren't going to make
there's,
it. You know, one of
there's
the
a,
most... Go ahead.
We'll finish what you were going to say.
Well, one of the most healing things that I ever did in my life was just a very simple exercise, and I actually led one of my classes through it, where I had us imagine that we were in an elevator, and we went to the 7th floor, and we got off, and it was beautiful gardens and flowers and waterfalls and blah, 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 and... I'm sorry, excuse me. And over in a grotto, sitting by a pool, was a beautiful being dressed in, of course, all white. And we went over and we met that being, and it opened its arms, and we hugged and communicated. And then that being got back into the elevator with us and descended down into the basement floor, where when the door opened, it was full of empty pizza boxes and beer cans and slime on the walls, and there was a poor, distraught, cast-out being there that we, of course, put together with the light side, and there was a communication, and we got messages from each side, and... You know, we introduced these two sides together, and they hugged, and great things happened over the next weeks and of doing that exercise. It was really one of the most profound things that I might ever have done, because in that little imagination that we did, that downstairs basement... In my own imagery that I went through, that downstairs basement completely transformed. All the slime on the walls went away. There was no trash, no garbage, and it was like I gave my shadow self complete acceptance.
If you were to look at that form of healing from an Egyptian perspective, there is... a figure, a deity in the Egyptian pantheon called Khonsu, K-H-O-N-S-U. He's a moon god, and the way I'm coming to understand it is, well, my teacher is Thoth, who is also a lunar deity, and Thoth is like the full moon, and Khonsu is like the other side of the moon that you don't see, the hidden face of the moon, or the dark phase of the moon as it goes through its phases. So he, like Thoth, is a measurer of time, and they call him the Wanderer, and he's the god of foreigners and travelers. But he's also the one who became very famous for as a demon healer, as one who could deal with people who were possessed. And the way that he would do it is if someone were ill or possessed, he would have like a feast and ceremony and an honoring of the demon. And then it would go away happy and content.
Our guest this evening is Nikki Scully, and Nikki and Linda Starwolf are the authors of Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt. And Nikki, of course, as we said earlier, is the author of Alchemical Healing and also Alchemical Healing
the power animal
of also
meditation.
Of Power Animal Meditations. That was it. Yeah. And I love your books, Nikki. I want to let folks know. Give a website. Where can they go? Where do you want folks to go to buy your book?
Oh, shamanicjourneys.com.
Okay.
That's one of my, all the websites that I have point to the same website, which started as NikkiScully.com or ShamanicJourneys.com. But we also have just launched the Alchemical Healing Academy, which is the school of many campuses that we are creating around the country and in some places throughout the world to begin to express these teachings on a larger scale. And so alchemicalhealing.com, shamanicjourneys.com, or nikkiscully.com all point to the same website where you can read. We have numerous articles on Egypt, on healing, on planetary healing and conscious evolution, on cancer, because I'm a cancer survivor. I do monthly or sometimes every 6 weeks these free cancer phone bridges for people who are dealing directly with cancer and people who are supporting or wanting to support people who are dealing with cancer. And this last Saturday, 80 of us got together on the telephone and another 20 at my home, and we did this incredible healing ceremony for dealing with cancer. And all that information is on the website. The CDs, I don't really do cassette tapes anymore. Everything's been upgraded to CDs, and I even have a DVD out.
Cool.
And then there's two projects that your listeners will probably want to know about that are giveaways for people with AIDS, leukemia, and cancer, which is a CD journey, a journey for healing with Kuan Yin, that is a project that we have created that sustains itself from people who buy it, but it's actually a giveaway to anyone who needs it. We've given away about 10,000 of them, and Jerry Garcia plays on it along with Roland Barker, who produced the music for it. And then a second giveaway is for children with potentially terminal diseases. And that one is also a giveaway, and it's called And You Will Fly. And it's a radio play exquisitely produced in which the child that listens to it has an experience of being the volunteer in an animal circus. And while playing with the coyote clowns and taming the tigers, the child is empowered to find their own capacity to help heal themselves or deal with whatever situation that they're going through. So that's some of the things that you could get to through my website.
Cool. Way cool. Wonderful.
And, of course, my trips to Egypt. That's,
yes.
That's big. And my classes and you know, because I do, I just finished a 10-day intensive alchemical healing practitioner certification program, which was wonderfully successful. Everybody came here to my home. We had, you know, 20 people staying here, and we did all this work. It was really quite wonderful. And next month, in August, we'll have a 10-day, two rounds of the Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt. We'll go through the entire process here at my home in Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, how fun. And, you know, there's just no possible way for me to do that. But, Nikki, come the first of the year, if you're going to do another one, I want to come and study with you.
Oh, thank you,
Ray. I would love to come and do 10 days with you. How fun would that be?
It's pretty great.
I know it is. And then I want to go to Egypt with you.
Well, so, I'm going to Egypt. The trip in November actually is waitlisted already and has been for a bit now. We're considering opening it, making it larger. That's with me and Normandy Ellis, my favorite scholar priestess on Egypt, and Mary Greer, the fabulous Tarot priestess and scholar and priestess of Isis. And
yes,
so we're leading this amazing group this November. And then in 2008, I'm going to be leading a group with Dr. Bruce Lipton. Do you know him?
The
Biology of Belief?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he and I are
We should get him on the show. You should come on.
Oh, absolutely.
We should do a two-hour show with him.
Well, he can pack a lot in a short time. If you could get him for an hour, you should take him. He's fabulous.
I'll take
so dynamic.
Absolutely.
And he and I are going to be weaving. He's a cellular biologist, and we're going to be weaving cellular biology, quantum physics, and shamanism through the Egyptian mysteries when we go to Egypt. He and I are also going to do some teaching here in Eugene in December, so I'm really excited about that.
And when in 2008, when are you going to Egypt? What month?
The trip with Bruce is April 25th to May 10th, I believe.
April 25th to May 10th.
May 10th. And then Starwolf and I will be leading the Egyptian Mysteries in October 31st. To November 15th, I think, in 2008, will be Starwolf and I leading an Egypt trip together. So we've got a lot of Egypt coming up.
Oh, I have to go. I have to. Well, let's get on here. Consciousness is awakening around the ability of humans to affect nature. But awareness alone is not enough to make a positive change. Interesting. You say people have to care, and we have to move beyond apathy.
You have to put your actions where your thoughts and beliefs are. You have to step up to the plate and use everything you have to co-create reality. Nobody's going to do this by themselves. The problem is that people tend to feel helpless in the face of the cataclysmic proportions of the problems that we're facing on this planet.
Yeah.
And they're real. And so what's the big response in our culture is more TV, more escape, more, you know, how do I just not notice? More consumerism.
Right.
And those of us who are waking up, the next step, the first step is to wake up at a personal level, to become aware and conscious. Then the next step, which is the work that I'm doing now and the book that I'm writing now, is how to put our heart minds together so that we can co-create, not just amongst ourselves, but with spirit, with the intelligent medium of creation that is totally supportive and willing to assist us if we pay attention and tie in, then together we can make